This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Passes, does it.
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
What's up? Welcome back to Play Testy. It's episode 190. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Remember, like, rate, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on the WEEI YouTube channel. Rate 5 stars. You know the drill. Find us on the socials at PlayTessy on both Twitter, Instagram, and I guess now we're on TikTok. But yes, Sammy and Pat here as usual, but we are super pumped to be joined by UFC play-by-play commentator, host of Anik and Florian podcast, and WEEI alum, John Anik. So, John, first of all, welcome to PlayTessy, making the debut. Super pumped to have you on. But the first thing I got to ask you is you got to tell us about your time at WEEI.
So I was an intern at WEEI. I was holding up K cards the summer of 2000, working for Pepe and the Water Boys, Anthony Pepe, who I went on to host the Diehards with him and Ryan Russillo at 1510 The Zone, the Sporting News Radio Boston affiliate. So I had a short time at WEEI. I always wanted to be a morning drive host or an afternoon drive host on WEEI. And I had the chance recently when Gresh and Fourier had a show to go in studio as a guest host. And nostalgic doesn't even begin to describe it. You know, I was always working for sort of the underdog for most of my sports broadcasting career. And 1510 The Zone was certainly the underdog to WEEI. I mean, I don't even know how big the number would be as far as just how big an underdog we were trying to chase them. So, always respect for those three letters. And as a sports radio guy, it just never felt any bigger than Sports Radio 850 WEEI. Never got to scream those, you know, letters like on a daily basis, but it sure would have been fun.
Well, that was a beautiful segue, because my next question is, I want you to explain to people who might not know 1510 The Zone. It's kind of like this mythical station that some people know about it, but give us the backstory for those who haven't really heard about it.
So 50,000 watts, if you can believe that, right? But a lot of people would challenge that just based upon how hard a stick it was to hear over the years. But we felt like we were the little engine that could. And for me, it was maybe a unique way that I found my way on the air. But I was alongside Ryan Russillo, who most people know as just an NBA savant and really the guy who taught me how to prepare to, you know, be a sports radio guy and eventually a sports broadcaster. But as far as the station was concerned, there was big investment up front when the station switched to sports. Eddie Andelman and Sean McDonough, who to me is, you know, the all-time great as far as play-by-play is concerned. And, you know, it was the Boston Celtics radio home, but nobody could hear the games. So there were a lot of issues and obstacles and hurdles that we were trying to navigate. And, you know, I was the business manager making $21,000 a year and was just trying to find my way on the air. Anthony Pepe had been poached from WEEI to 1510 The Zone, and he was doing marketing and he was doing some things on the air. And, shoestring budget doesn't even begin to describe it. And, you know, we had whatever traction we had, and, you know, it was enough of a start for, you know, guys like me and Ryan to get our feet wet in a very challenging business. So,
you know, just in case people couldn't tell by the Red Sox shirt, the Celtics backpack, or the Vinatieri newspaper hanging up behind you, you're a local, local guy.
Oh, my God. It's a little much tonight, huh? I don't really always have the Red Sox shirt as well in the backpack. Here we go, though, huh?
Yeah, so people didn't know, you're a local guy. Do you remember, like, what made you fall in love with the Red Sox? You have, like, a core memory where you're like, I love the Boston Red Sox.
I smoke way too much weed to, I think, remember anything of the sport. No, I remember my dad. My dad is a Long Islander, and he is from Seaford, New York, and he didn't grow up a Red Sox fan, whereas my mother was a Red Sox fan, but my father went to Northeastern. And so he sort of, you know, got into like just Boston. And so when the ball went through Bill Buckner's legs in 1986, unfortunately, that is my most vivid early first Red Sox memory. And it was my father who grew up kind of a Mets fan, but not really, and then was just sort of absorbed by the Red Sox and maybe breaking whatever curse he thought existed. I never believed in that. But I remember my dad like waking me up to watch me maybe watch something special, and the ball went through Bill Buckner's legs. And I remember my dad, who wasn't a super emotional guy, making a noise as if he had just seen someone get murdered, you know, like, oh, God, you know. So that's my first memory. But no, we grew up and the Red Sox were on every night. And I remember, unfortunately, I was very drunk when Aaron Boone hit that home run off the late great field. I was recently asked, and that was the 2003 ALCS Game 7, if you don't know, but I was recently asked if I could reverse any singular game in Boston sports history, what would it be? And I said, certainly, you know, getting Randy Moss and the Patriots to 19-0, but closely followed by that game in 2003. But, you know, a lot of sort of early memories, and I'll just never forget when they finally broke through. I'm an older man than all of you, but there was nothing like 2004. There never would.
It's interesting that the 86 memory is your first core Red Sox memory, because for me, my first core Red Sox memory is that Aaron Boone homer. And for such a similar reason, it was because my dad's reaction to it and like the days following. And like, I fell in love with the team in 04. But if you ask me my first baseball memory, it's not any part of the 03 ALCS or any part leading up to it. It was the homer itself and the reaction that followed. Yeah.
And thank God Aaron Boone's a fucking shit manager, huh? No, I'm sure he's fine, but a lot of Yankees fans would love a different guy. So
yeah, I celebrated that extension.
Pat loves Boone.
Oh, dude, he's great. Oh, I hate Boone. I hate Aaron Boone.
You love him.
Yes, you love him. So I got to know, big baseball gambling guy, what got you into that portion of the game? Because I think that's such an untapped thing that obviously the NFL, super people gamble like crazy on it, even the NBA. But baseball, I feel like, has lagged behind in it. What got you so into it?
It's every day, right? I mean, I started doing it in 1996 when I was in college. I think my email address at the time, right? I mean, this is before you guys were born, it was like s424565@gettysburg.edu, right? That's the email address I used to get an account at sportsbook.ag. But I was betting these daily three-team baseball parlays, $10 three-team baseball parlays, and that's what got me into it. And I also liked the ability to ding and dong, right? If a team loses, you come back with them the next day. If they lose two in a row, I know a lot of the super sharp handicappers will scoff when they hear talk of like system betting with baseball, you know, whereas I'm going to take a New York Yankees homestand, right? And I'm going to determine how much money I want to win, say $25, and how much money I'm willing to lose, right? And so you bet the Yankees every day until they win one game on that homestand, and then you don't touch the homestand again. Now, if they lose all six, depending on what you're willing to lose, you could be in real trouble. But the thesis statement is they won't go 0-6 on the homestand, right? But a lot of sharps hate that talk. But we started doing a lot of system betting like that on homestands. And I just love the daily nature of baseball and being able to sort of, you know, clean up the mess from the day before.
All right. I got a broadcasting question lined up. But before I get to that, for the younger audience, how did you bet in 1996? Because it is wildly different from today's world of betting.
So it was sportsbook.ag or sportsbook.com, one of those two websites, from my compact Presario laptop with a number for an email address. And yeah, I mean, I guess I probably used a Bank of America check card to make an illegal deposit in like Antigua or something. And yeah, I don't know how else to describe it. You know, I actually got in some trouble with a bookie in 1999 because a buddy of mine was doing these like A&Rs, like action and reverses. TJ Murphy, if you're out there, I mean, I've called this kid out on a million podcasts. You know? He owes my mom $3,000. It's the only time she's ever had to get me out of gambling debt. But yeah, I thought I was going to get my ankle snapped. So, you know, mom, help with the $3,000 wire transfer. I thought I was like down $125. I show up to meet the guy and I was down like $3,000 because I let some kid use my account. I was 20 years old, made a mistake. And mom cleaned up the mess.
Show up to meet the guy. Well, first of all, the fact that the guy's name is TJ Murphy from Boston, it's a gambling thing. That's hilarious. That's the most Boston thing ever. TJ Murphy, kid.
Right, right.
But you said go to meet the guy. You had to go in person to collect or to give him?
So my bookie was a bartender, this guy named Rob, and he told me I had to go meet the guy. And I'm not trying to like make this up. Now, Rob, and when I show up, I meet the guy, the elder gentleman who had all this jewelry or whatever. And then Rob, our bartender, who was in a fucking cast up to his knee. Now, take that for what it's worth, right? No. It wasn't to strike fear in me, you know. He insisted that, you know, the injury was like maybe a torn Achilles and something unrelated to the guy, right? But, you know, wasn't like the best visual for me. So the guy was like, I understand you're a kid. You made a mistake. You let this other guy bet in your account. But like, we need $3,000 by Friday, you know. And thankfully, I had a mother who was able to drum up $3,000. I don't know if I paid her back.
Thank you, Ma. Wow.
That's a hell of a mom. Hell of a mom.
That is a Boston experience.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we'll get into broadcasting now. What I want to know, off the top of your head, best call you've ever heard in Red Sox history?
You know, that's tricky. I mean, Sean McDonough, I put on such a pedestal. And I tried to do a little bit of homework before I came on with you guys, right? He is the best play-by-play guy of all time. And I can relate to the voice cracks. You know, there's so many different videos on YouTube of his voice cracking during these seminal moments. And I've been there. But in terms of a singular call, it's probably like a Joe Castiglione call, you know, just because of my radio background and just how important 2004 was. And, you know, the little engine that could at 15:10 the zone, you know, shortly after Joe Castiglione made that call, you know, we were up in Burlington, Massachusetts, and we went on the air, I think, at midnight or 1 a.m. Eastern right after they had won it, which was absolutely amazing for me at like 26 years old or whatever I was. But yeah, I don't know. I don't have like a singular call other than Joe's when they won the title.
You know, I've heard you – the reason I asked, because I've heard you talk about best sports calls. I thought you were going to go with Joe Buck when he, we'll see you tomorrow night.
Yeah, so, you know, Joe Buck is just okay for me and my twin brother. You know, like, I do think that it's hard, and I am somebody who's accused of bias at times, you know, but at the time when Joe Buck was making those calls, you know, I didn't feel like he was, you know, a big supporter of the Boston Red Sox, you know, and I can assure you he doesn't give a shit what I think, right? So it's fine. But, yeah, I mean, I think I have checked a lot of the fan that resided within because of the nature of my job. But, you know, if you saw that clip where I acknowledged Joe Buck's call, like, we'll see you later tonight or whatever it was. I thought it was a great call in the moment, you know. But, you know, we felt like he was rooting for the fucking New York Yankees the whole goddamn time. Right? So it's hard for me to answer that question as the man of veracity that I am to answer it truthfully. You know, my twin brother, when he sees me acknowledge Joe Buck, he rolls his eyes. But no, Joe's fantastic. But it's hard to take the Bostonian out of me at times when I assess some of those calls.
Fair.
So as someone who kind of flew up through the ranks, right? You had WEI at 1510, and now obviously you're with the UFC. You say, you know, very early on your goal was that morning drive or that afternoon show with WEI. Much bigger platform, I think, UFC. How was your first call for the UFC? Like, were there any jitters with that? Was it natural? Like, how did that go for you?
Yeah, so it's different, right? Doing national, global stuff versus local stuff. But gosh, man, it would be a fantasy to be back in Boston at some point in time. But I think nerves are an interesting thing. You know, preparation, I think, is where a lot of my nerves and anxiety are rooted, right? Just all the work that needs to be done just to show up to the arena. You know, I got the chance to do the now defunct Bellator Fighting Championship season one in 2009. And I had a lot of nerves for that first call. I was thinking they had the wrong guy, but almost immediately after the first fight started, you sort of like lean into your strengths, right? And I grew up around sports and talking sports and wanted to be a play-by-play guy. And yeah, you know, when in doubt, you just say, finishes the fight by submission instead of getting into guillotine or rear naked choke. You stay in your lane. You play to your strengths. I did that in 2009 for that first Bellator call. And I remember being nervous for my first UFC call 3 years later, January 20th, 2012, but not quite as nervous as I was in 2009. I mean, Dana White, I think, kind of, you know, shook us up without meaning to do so, right? Just getting us excited. And, you know, he said to me, you know, we're not asking you to be Joe Rogan or Mike Goldberg, just be yourself. But I think having had that experience in 2009, which really shook me, prepared me for 2012. And there are nerves, I think, for every show to whatever degree, right? When I'm working, not the broadcast booth, not calling the fights, like if I'm working a desk or something where I'm just sort of being a host, I don't necessarily have those butterflies or that adrenaline rush that I get when I'm down there and fucking Joe Rogan's to my left, you know? But I think some nerves are a good thing, whether it's your first show or your, you know, 2000th.
How did you get knowledgeable in the world of MMA? Because it's totally a sport where you have the hardcores and the casuals and the hardcore fans. You call one position, you call side control, top control or something. You call it wrong, they'll get on you, Twitter, blah, 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 blah. How'd you learn about that?
Well, I mean, I sort of referenced in my earlier answer, you're not going to hear me being like, oh, is that a Bravo or a Darce or Alma Plata, Anaconda, right? Trying to stay in my lane. Like Dana White didn't hire me to be your sort of intrinsic Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. Now, I took Brazilian jiu-jitsu classes for a little bit and did not enjoy that exercise in pajamas. We did it like five times and decided that was enough of that. But, you know, I do think a lot of it really is just about playing to your strengths and staying in your lane. And you can't help but accrue a lot of information just with repetitions. And so now I look up and I've had a lot of experience calling mixed martial arts and watching fighting, but I'm still not an analyst, right? And sometimes people introduce me as a color commentator. I know you guys did not because you're smart, right? But like, I still try to stay in my lane, even though I do consider myself to be pretty knowledgeable when it comes to the mixed martial arts, but I'm not an analyst. I'm paid to be the play-by-play guy. I read a lot of sponsorships and advertisements and promos, and I try to get the biographical and background stuff in there. I try to cap these championship calls with the energy and whatever sort of knowledge can be added to that historical moment. Then when it comes to MMA, I'll always be, I think, more equipped to call football or basketball or baseball than this stuff.
So related to baseball here, this is an interesting question for you. Which Red Sox player, past or present, do you think would fare well in MMA? Have you ever thought about that?
It's a great question. So, you know, a lot of the young athletes, certainly on the team, like Duran is the first guy that comes to mind. I don't know what his weight class would be. What do they list his weight at on RedSox.com? That's an interesting question.
Ooh, he's got to be.
I'm going to guess 210 is my guess.
So, no, I think he'd be a hair over middleweight.
205. So he'd cut to 185. He'd be a middleweight.
So hear me out, boys. Just imagine Duran. Even like, what's his height since you got it up there?
6'1".
Oh, my goodness. Right. Yeah. So he would be a middleweight. We don't need him staring death in the face, cutting to welterweight. Right. But could you imagine that guy at 185 pounds with. So, yeah, I mean, and Mookie Betts, for example, and, you know, I don't know if he was on your agenda tonight, but let us all say a prayer for Mookie Betts, who's like my size now, dropping 25 pounds. Right. But when I think about Mookie Betts as a fighter in an octagon, right? I mean, you talk about a guy who could be like Anthony Showtime Pettis, you know, jumping off the fence and kicking a guy in the face. Just imagine this for a second. Mookie Betts fighting at 135 pounds.
Demon. He'd be good, man. He'd be good. I think he's the UFC
undisputed bantamweight champion.
You know? Well, you know, Mookie Betts is a good pick just because that guy can take on any sport and be the best at it in any room.
Yeah,
Mookie Betts versus Pantoja.
You know, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, guys like Devers at heavyweight or no?
No.
That would be, he'd be like Big Country.
Yeah. You know who I do like at heavyweight? We were with him the other day. Garrett Crochet is a fucking horse. Mm. He is so big.
He's got huge like ass and thigh, right? Thigh.
Yeah.
What do they list his weight at? Do they weigh these guys?
He's got to be 6'6", 240.
I think he's 250, 6'6", 250 something.
So do you guys know what our heavyweight limit is for a non-title fight?
266.
What a fucking genius. I'll be back anytime.
Look at you, Sam.
Yeah, so 266, right? So Garrett Crochet would probably, as a heavyweight, like weigh 266 or 265 and be an absolute beast with like a left kick, you know?
Oh, yeah.
He does do the leg kick like 100 times a game. He throws 100 tie kicks per game. Yeah. So he would probably have to cut too.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah. He's got
the Arroyo kick. Like the leg can get up there. He just needs a head.
Yeah.
Bronson Arroyo.
So as excited as I am talking to you boys tonight, and, you know, maybe we'll get to opening day, which I believe is Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? Right?
Yep.
Right on.
So I immediately go to Mexico City tomorrow, fighter meetings, format meetings Thursday, diving into fighter prep. I will see not a pitch of opening day, right? I'll check the box score maybe in between fighter meeting, you know, 1 through 15 or whatever, but, and then weigh in Friday, you know, call and fight Saturday. So as excited as I am talking to you boys, you know, my professional life takes over and unfortunately the Red Sox can't, but the summer of 2001, after I graduated college, I watched like 141 games or something, you know, so.
Whew. Hell yeah.
Holy
hell
shit.
Yeah.
Well, we got two quick ones and then we'll get you out of here, 'cause we know you got to do prep. Real quick, better fight, Joe Kelly versus Tyler Austin or Jason Varitek punching A-Rod? I think this is easy.
I mean, yeah. Dude, so that summer that I watched 141 games, Jason Varitek shows up in my section at Legal Seafoods. You want to talk about nerves. Forget a Conor McGregor pay-per-view. Jason Varitek shows up in my section. I don't think my heart has beaten faster in my life, you know? So he's like my favorite. You know, I was such a Red Sox fan that some of our coworkers at Legal Seafoods went to like Herman's Sporting Goods and got baseball so Varitek would sign him for us. Like, you could say anything, Jason Varitek, and he would probably be the answer. That was a tremendously special sports moment. And I guess I can say now, and I know I've already cussed too much, but like, thank God these guys have rings, because I don't know where my relative joyfulness in life would be you know, if these guys weren't able to break through. And, you know, they brought joy to a lot of people, my mother and everybody else in New England. And thank God they broke through. Thank God, like, Jason Tatum broke through, so we don't have to, you know, deal with the consequences of these guys not breaking through.
Yeah. Stephon Diggs, the Pats are back to 7 wins maybe. But, yeah.
I'm much more optimistic than you. I mean, things turn over so quickly roster-wise in the NFL that it really has to do with Drake May. And if he's the guy, you know, I think the defense will certainly show up. I mean, Mike Vrabel just makes such a huge difference. So we're very excited.
Love Vrabes. Love Vrabes. All right,
I will say I met Mike Vrabel at a UFC live event, and this should be a feather in his cap, right? He could not have cared less to meet me. Right now, Joe Mazzulla, I consider a friend, and Joe Mazzulla is a martial artist. And as you guys probably know, like a UFC fan. So that's the foundation for our relationship. But I like how disenchanted Mike Vrabel was with me. You know what I mean? If it makes sense, like as the Patriots head coach, right? Like, it's interesting. Aaron Rodgers was I think much more excited to meet me than Tom Brady was, because he's a tried and true UFC fan, you know. But I want my head coach to be no nonsense and have an edge. And I like the fact that Mike Vrabel couldn't wait to move on from shaking my fucking hand. You know, I love the guy. I think he's the greatest.
Fuck yes. So, fuck yes. Business. I'm excited for Vrabes.
Yeah.
John.
So wait, hold on. But Pat, before you get to your last question, yeah. I got to ask.
Go ahead.
Joe Mazzulla, personal friend. Do you have a go-to Joe Mazzulla story?
So, dude, like, I got to meet him and exchange cell phone numbers with the head coach of the Boston Celtics. Like, it's the greatest day of my life.
Yeah.
So kept saying, as a New England kid, as you know he is, right? Shout out to the great state of Rhode Island.
Oh, yeah.
He just kept saying, like, dude, I'm just so happy to bring it home for Boston. He just kept fucking saying it. I was with the guy for 5 minutes. He just kept saying, dude, I'm just so happy we were able to get it done for Boston, in his New England accent, right? My mind is effectively blown. I'm sitting there in the UFC broadcast booth, you know, and they tell me that Joe Mazzulla wants to come over and meet me, you know? Like, I relay that to my mother, you know? It's like she's crying her eyes out, you know what I mean? And the fact, excuse me, like, that I could text him right now is just supremely special to me. I can't even tell you. I don't even know whether to like abuse it or engage or what, but like, you know, he texted a picture on February 8th from the locker room, right? He's prepping the game on a laptop and watching like the UFC fights in the background.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Pre-game watch. Let's go. So yeah, love the head coach of the Seas, and just excited to watch him work the sidelines here in a postseason in a few weeks.
That's so sick.
That's awesome. That's fucking awesome.
Last question for you, arguably the most important. What do you think of the Red Sox in 2025?
So it's interesting to hear your Patriots pessimism on the front end of this question. Right? So yeah. I was writing about inequity in Major League Baseball for 1510thezone.com extensively in like 2003, 2004, 2005. So when it comes to payroll, I have a really hard time wrapping my head around where Major League Baseball is relative to these other sports, right? I know owners deserve to be discredited for not spending money, but Major League Baseball, when it comes to payroll, is so fucked right now that I have to qualify my answer with my frustration for where we are at. I can't wait to see what the Red Sox do in getting to 90 wins. I don't know how they're going to do it, but the Alex Bregman signing was huge. You know, he wanted to be here. You know, Nolan Arenado wanted to be in Boston as well. I have that on good authority, right? And that's a big deal. You know, I mean, certainly we've heard people talk about loving playing at Fenway Park, but people want to be here. My twin brother would say Alex Cora deserves a lot of credit, you know, and I'll subscribe to that. I do think he's a unifying force and, you know, in two languages, no less. So, yes, I mean, I just led with your pessimism about the Patriots because I think I am more optimistic a guy in general about the Boston sports team. So I think the Red Sox can win the World Series championship if they stay healthy and the bullpen and the pitching holds up. I mean, let's go.
Hell yeah, man. I love it.
You got Bregman showing up to camp in a John Jones shirt too, to put the cherry on top for you.
He is so Mick Maynard, our UFC matchmaker, he and Alex Bregman are like best friends. So, you know, and Trevor Story, like, must be a huge UFC fan because the day he signed with the Red Sox, I went to follow the guy on Instagram and he was following me, which can only mean that he was a UFC fan. I connected with Trevor a little bit and connected with Bregman at least when he signed. Because, yeah, there's a lot of this Major League Baseball contingent, right? Like Kike Hernandez last year. Before the Dodgers did all of these things, you know, I was trying to support him from afar, and he's a big UFC fan, big. So I was messaging him, and he's like, "We're gonna fuck up the Mets, and then we're gonna fuck up the Yankees for Boston," you know. And then they go out.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
So yeah, it's cool. So we got a lot of these baseball players really like the UFC, so it's been cool to connect with them. And yeah, I think the Red Sox are gonna. Yeah, I think that if they stay healthy, I think over 86.5 wins and a playoff spot for sure. Then you just see what you can do with it.
You will enjoy this. The second that I saw the Bregman signing, I got 84.5 wins on DraftKings. It was the first thing I did was hop on and throw money on that. And I've never felt better about a bet in my life.
So I thought they should have signed Carlos Correa. Now, retrospectively, you can say whatever you want, right? But he is also a UFC fan and a guy that I have gotten to know. So I bring whatever perspective to this answer. He is a championship player, right? He is trying to win World Series championships, right? Championship hunger, desire, aspiration, right? Alex Bregman is cut from that cloth. You want as many of those guys as possible, right? And so if he thinks that he can accomplish that goal, playing in the postseason in Boston in front of those fans at the greatest sports venue in the world. And yeah, I mean, maybe he didn't get the deal in totality that he was looking for, but he wanted to come to Boston. And, you know, like even when you see what the Patriots are doing right now, it's one thing to spend. You got to get the guys to be willing to take your money and come to you because they think something can happen. So yes, I'm excited. Even though I won't see a pitch on Thursday, I'll be tracking from afar.
Well said, man. John Anik, you've been super generous with your time. It's been a blast. You're welcome on Play Tessie anytime you want. We really appreciate you jumping on with us, man. It's been an honor.
Anytime, boys. Congrats on 190 episodes. Keep it going. Thanks for having me.